the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 15 minutes in. We'll start it with Steve Asmussen, who is churning out the top-looking two-year-olds on a regular basis, but hard not to be looking toward the remaining Triple Crown races as we bring in Steve and congratulate him on Pneumatic's win in Monmouth at the Pegasus, certainly enough points for Derby, but that might not be the plan. Steve, congratulations, and not just on Pneumatic, but on all these two-year-olds winning every day. Did we lose Steve? I think we lost him. Maybe lost him. No, he's there. Steve? No. I don't know, Case. I don't hear. I don't, usually I can hear a little something in the background. So, all right, pick up and see what what's going on there. Oh, that was bad. By the way, Hammer's going to join us on the tail end today, and two topics. I wanted Hammer to address the claiming race concept. In fact, you know what? I'll bring it up with Steve Asmussen too, because you know Steve certainly participates in plenty of stakes of claiming races. And I also want Hammer, in his experience, if he's ever seen every single horse get claimed out of a race, as we saw Friday at Saratoga. I think now I can hear Steve Asmussen. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, let's start with Pneumatic. I got a lot of two-year-olds to talk to you about, but Pneumatic, boy, they bet him like he was going to win easy, and then he won easy.
Quality horse. I think he was in the right spot and looked good doing it, and has every reason to move forward off of a victory like that.
Coming out of the Belmont, where he ran a very nice even fourth, and here he, boy, Joe Bravo, Joe didn't move a muscle, Steve. He just cruised up to the Pino stretch out, that Arcan, and went right on by. Talk about his development and what's going to go into the decision. Seems like you're leaning Preakness.
Well, I think that the timing between the races that we gave him from the Belmont to the Pegasus, and how he responded to that, and the race that he ran, makes the Preakness, which is 6.5 weeks from right now, the right call to get his best race.
Nice. He's back. He came back to Saratoga yesterday?
Yes, he did. I'm very pleased with how he came out of the race. And he's a big, beautiful animal that has seen good company, accepted it, and is going to go into the Preakness with his confidence where we want it, off of a very easy win.
You know, you say that, and I'm just looking down. This horse has made a lot of progress, Steve, in a short amount of time, relatively, because he only debuted in February.
Exactly, and I think that, like I said, he's seen Maxwell, he's seen Tis the Law. He took those lessons, gave him a significant amount of time after the Belmont. He trained very smartly, and we saw the results Saturday, and liked the style in which he did it. And like I said, he's a very talented horse with his confidence where it needs to be, and with his size, it stands to reason that he will benefit from the 7 weeks between the Pegasus and the Preakness.
Very nice. He's a Winchell homebred, and I think the last I know I looked at some point, I think this is you know, the dam, that teardrop has got, you know, comes from a very nice family. And I think this is her first foal.
First foal out of a Tappet mare that is a three-quarter sister to, you know, Pyro and just
yeah, okay.
the great Winchell Heat families.
That, yes.
You know, the horse has every right to be as significant as it is he's going to prove to be.
You know, you mentioned, you said about size. You know, sometimes first foals can be just a little smaller. You know, not unusual for, you know, for first time dams. You know, to their first foal sometimes will be the, you know, the smallest. But you know, Uncle Mo, based on the development, feels like this is going to be a big strapping older horse, and so I can understand, you know, the nice. You know, you've challenged him, but you're also being, you know, being smart about bringing him along.
Well, he's an extremely talented horse, and we took our chances with a very talented horse, and we're fortunate we still have something left. I think we've all seen that, you know. Know the quality of Tis the Law, know the quality of Maxwell, and for him to continue on and actually excel from those experiences is a very good sign.
Yeah, and really the only horses, in addition to, you know, the two winners and the Matt Wynn and the Belmont, Dr. Post, Max Player, and New York Traffic, the only horses that have finished ahead of him. And he also, that maiden race, even going back to Oaklawn, and this, you know, not a surprise, but there were a bunch of winners that came out of that race, including Liam's Pride. So he faced good company all along the way, and Pneumatic will look to Baltimore. Meanwhile, Steve, the two-year-olds, let's talk about this, because you've had a summer that really a dream run with the babies.
Yeah, well, we're blessed with opportunity. We get some tremendous individuals. I think we respect these opportunities and make the most of them, but we're not running for them. It is their ability that has put them in a winner's circle.
We didn't talk last week, so let's talk about Jackie's Warrior in the special. And clearly, this McLean's Music, you know, marks himself as a, you know, one of the early serious players in the class.
Well, yes, it was a very visually impressive race. Nice big strong colt for Son of McLean's Music, for Kirk and Judy Robeson, and he came out of it in great shape. Had his first freeze back yesterday, and hopeful is next for him.
So you're I think I read where you were going to take a wait and see. So maybe it's good we waited, and you feel like he's bounced out of the special well enough to run on Labor Day weekend. That's cool.
Yes.
Well, and you know how many grade one opportunity right now, and you know it seems like, you know, why wouldn't you strike while the juvie's hot.
Well, we're very, very fortunate to have a horse like him to lead over for the hopeful.
Steve, is you know, beyond the 7/8, just speculate about you know, McLean's Music seemingly are middle distance oriented. What's your feel for, you know, just looking at him and you know, in terms of his scope, what kind of horse he might be long term?
Well. Well, I think that the hopeful is the most significant two-year-old race next on the calendar, and we're very fortunate to run him. I do realize that it is because of how mature he is physically and mentally, but it'll take some doing for somebody to catch up to him.
Nice. All right. We'll let him be the engine on the train. Meanwhile, you counterbalanced the boys' stake with the Adirondack win. Talk about thoughtfully.
You know, just absolutely beautiful filly, physically and pedigree wise, for Scott Hyder, the Donato Lania purchased out of Saratoga August. last year, and I can thank Mia Mischief for the opportunity with her. Mr. Hyder was the third owner in Mia Mischief, and she did as well, and I'm sure that's how I was under consideration to get Thoughtfully, and the filly that went to Mom and Dad's in Laredo and came out of there and has not missed a beat, and very visually impressive way in which she won the Adirondack.
Did she snap out of it well enough to, you know, to think about the spin away?
She came out of the race beautifully, has been back to the track nicely with the Adirondack running on a Wednesday. We will adjust her schedule. We would expect her next race to obviously be a weekend stay and try to get her in rhythm for such a chance.
Very nice. All right. So it sounds like you'd like to, if she's right for it, the spin away feels like the obvious opportunity.
You know, speaking with Mr. Hyder and how the filly's doing at Saratoga, we'll just see what is best for her, obviously.
All right. Let's talk about the pair that came out of the weekend, Steve. Calibrate on Saturday, and then yesterday, Cantata. Start on Saturday with Calibrate.
Night of just an absolutely gorgeous distorted humor colt. That he is a man amongst boys at this stage, and we've been another that came through Laredo. Dad was extremely high on him when he sent him to us, and he has taken his work extremely professionally and could not have had more confidence walking over there with the opportunity to run him.
Nice, and this is a Winchell purchase as opposed to a homebred, but one
right,
that was
recommended by Dr. Lambert, and they've had obviously made some very successful purchases with Caput and Gunrunner, so quite a nice group to try to live up to.
That's a fairly good track record.
Yes, it is.
I love it. 340,000. And, you know, Steve, this one's out of a Dynaformer mare, Glamour and Style. Did you think about a turf sprint for him, or is he going to be dirt until otherwise indicated?
I don't think there's anything that he's not going to be able to handle.
Interesting.
Where would you like to run and dress up and go watch?
I love it. That's a great way to tell Mr. Winchell and DJ Fisk about. And just looking up and down here, she was unraced actually. That mare, Glamour and Style, she didn't make the races. She's now 10 years old, and seems to come from a pretty nice family. Out of a Royal Academy mare, an Irish Royal Academy mare, so a very grassy female family. But boy, he looked terrific on Saturday, and romped home at 2-1. And then there was yesterday, Steve, and I couldn't be there Saturday, but I was there yesterday. And Cantata, that was also equally impressive.
Yeah, what do you say about that? You know, what a very professional debut. I thought Ricardo handled the filly that we, you know, have the utmost hopes for and respect for. She broke cleanly, let them go about their business, just moved around them and went about her business when asked for it. But visually impressive of maiden races I've seen in a long time.
And that was echoed, you know, by a lot of people, Steve. And she's out of a flatter mare. There wasn't anything overly flashy in terms.
Are you there?
Mr. Aspen, it seems like I lost the connection with Steve. I'm going to send the show to break, if you can hold on for just a moment for me.
Racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back, and I guess I Case and I can't. Was it you or me that was it? You guys who got knocked out, or was it us? One of us. One of us got knocked out, and I don't think. I think it was you, Case. No, huh? Was it the studio? No, you think it was me? Okay, all right. Okay, yeah, because I can always hear it. Who's seen the movie Failsafe? There's that noise. you hear that there's like a almost like a electronic whine that kind of trickles through, and that is an indication to me that that the service has kicked out. So I knew right away. Oh, good. Okay. So Kay. And Steve, and I said thanks. I sent Steve a note and said thank you to him. Now we got in those two, and there's no number yet for Cantata's performance, but she won by 10 plus. I mean, it was everybody that was hanging around. They've moved actually the visitors to Saratoga, the owners groups, and the horsemen, from that enclosure with picnic tables, they've moved them over to the at the post pavilion, with that circular bar and right near Shake Shack. And so there's those tables and under the big tent, and people seem to like it. In fact, it was really quite fun to some degree. I got to tell you, yesterday, that was the first day that it felt, because there's people in not close. I mean, the tables are all separate, but there was probably 60 people, 50 people together, including Gary Gullo had some of his people, including his man Anthony Bob Peterson Stables, who has bought Union Gables and has taken over the bed and breakfast, the Union Gables. And in fact, they even got a win with the horse, Union Gables. And, so for those that are, that are looking for a place to stay, at Saratoga, and there's still people coming up. Plenty of people. Union Gables, they got a website too, uniongables.com. All right. And nothing but horse people. The whole town is nothing but horse people, including Rick Hammerly, who I'm reaching out to. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? I can't find anybody to go with me. I'd love to go to Saratoga for a week.
Well, you should make the move right before you should do it before you come to
Kentucky Downs. Yeah, it's getting a little close here. I've got to leave for there at the end of the month. But, no, I was all for it. But the place we usually go stopped the rent. I mean, they didn't want any people coming into their house. So that was squelched. And, after that, people are just, they look at me like I'm crazy. What do you mean? I mean, I'll go anywhere. But I tell you what, I've got the pictures back of some couple friends that went, on the lake, on the boat, sitting at the track as well, getting in there, and, just the feel of the whole deal. There's no better place to be in August or any time in Saratoga. So I'm really, that's one of the places that, believe me, we get around, but I'd rather, I'd love to spend a few days up there. But we'll get it all jumbled up, and we'll do double next year, I guess, the way it's going to be.
That's it. This is a rare Monday visit for you, and actually, we were a little too abbreviated on Friday, so it's. I'm glad to get you in here. But there are two topics that came up that I knew I was going to reach out to, to a racing office official, and who better than you on these topics? In your long history working in racing offices, have you ever seen every horse in a race get claimed?
No. Tom Ventura sent an email out to that effect the other day, and I immediately think it was a 5-horse field or something. Anyway, an 8-horse field with every horse being claimed. That's just incredible. And, I was taught early on by my man Bob Humphreys, every claim's a good claim. And I never really got it right off the bat. Like, what is he talking about? And, it's just like business. It's just, it keeps things moving. And that's what I mean. It's got new people that want horses, which is great. Somebody sold one, which is great. They put some cash in their pocket. So, every claim is a good claim, on the theory of that. And so, hey, $20,000 claimers, I mean, that's the meat and potatoes right there. So I'm sure in about 3 weeks there'll be a $25,000 claimer written somewhere in New York, and it should go.
This is part of the conversation that came out of yesterday's enclave there, the Jockey Club roundtable. And you've been to one or two over the years, no?
I have not.
I've never been
to one of those. We usually go up. I usually head up the week of the sale and stay 5-6 days and then go. And I think the roundtable like this is the week after. So I just never around. And, have never been to one, read about them and saw part of the thing yesterday. But, never been to one. And it's funny. I had talked to Sal this week, early in the week, just general catch-up. You know, Sal and I have been friends for 30 years, and I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he goes, I got to write something up for my deal at the round table. And that's when I was like, huh? What are you talking about? So I forgot about the round table and anything. So I didn't know what he was talking about, but apparently he said something about the Clayman races, which I don't really exactly know what he said, so you can fill me in.
Well, and I'm going to bounce it off you, because he frankly is offering a progressive mindset and approach, which could include getting away from claiming. And given the atmosphere and scrutiny we're under, having the sometimes uncertain status of horses that are being offered for claim, I guess it doesn't matter really if it's a nickel or 50,000. The fact that it's an unknown quantity that can only be kind of guessed at, glanced at visually, and people might track certain horses before a couple of starts before trying to claim one. But the idea of going to a rating system, essentially, I essentially would think that means every race would be more or less a starter, right? Like a starter handicap based on the rating system.
Okay, so couple things I want to talk about. I actually wrote a paper on this for the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation a little over a year ago. Going down that same road that Sal did, not really a for or against, but just an option. But I want to talk just briefly about the claiming game itself, how it's evolved, and how it is a pure marketplace there. Yes, there were some problems, and there's always problems when something's for sale. When you go to buy a used car, for instance, you look it over and take a shot. Horses have always been available for purchase, claimed, or for a certain number. The thought being that if you run a $25,000 horse for $10,000, you're probably going to get claimed, but you're probably going to win the purse. And then if you run a $10,000 horse for $25,000, nobody's going to take it, but you're running against better horses. I mean, that's kind of the whole thing in a nutshell. It's find their level. But we've made some improvements in that claiming game in the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and the fact that I think some places we've gone too far and some places we haven't. But if you claim a horse now in most states and it gets injured on the track or gets eased, the claim becomes void. So a little protection for the buyer there. I'm not a big fan of the after race inspection voided claim. I think that takes it a little bit too far. But it came down years ago. Like you said, you inspect the horses, you watch them in the morning, you keep track of them, you do your paddock work, you watch the legs, and that's where the sharp guys in the horsemanship took over, the guys that knew every horse on the track and saw a little place they could improve them. They'd put a claim in and do their deal and run them back. So that's what it means by every claim is a good claim, because it keeps things moving. Now the theory of taking away the claiming and having them being run according to rankings, and what that basically means is having a committee that does nothing but rank horses, put a number by every horse, be it allowance horse, stake horse, claiming horse. So let's say the better horses would be ranked over 100, and the claimant rank horses would be ranked a little bit lower. So in theory, you would write a race and say, okay, this race is for horses ranked between 50 and 60. And the higher ranking in there would get more weight, the lower ranking would get less weight, and that's where you could run. You can't run a 62 horse with the 50s or the 70s. You run in the 60s. So when the race comes up, that's your deal. You put them in, and that's where you're ranked. If you run a couple good races there, your ranking goes up and maybe go up into the 70s and so on. Very simple. If you drop into the 50s, and now you run with the 50s. Sales, you know, I don't know where the sales come in. Obviously, they could be private sales, whether there's some kind of, you know, selling the procedure after the race or after the races that day on certain horses that maybe have a tag by them that said, yes, this horse is for sale. But that'd be the general theory. They do that in Europe. They rank, or in England at least, they rank, I think they rank all the horses. They have a special committee that we would work with during the Breeders' Cup selection, and every horse had a number, and every race had a number, and, you know, and it took a while. I mean, it would take a while to get there to get those rankings done, but that, in theory, I believe, is what Sal was talking about and what has been banded about, you know, for years, a little bit more so lately. You know, not, and like I said, not sure what the advantages or the disadvantages are. It does take away that, you know, that sale element where some guy's happy to lose one and some guy's happy to get one, and it kind of keeps things moving. It keeps horses moving around from barn to barn, which is, you know, overall, I think a good thing in the game. So that's the way I understand it. And like I said, I'm kind of neutral on it, right? So I exactly see how long this, that we would take to get these rankings and who's going to be ranking them, and is it going to be for every track, which obviously it would probably have to be. As horses move from track to track, the ranking would go with them. So I have to listen to Sal's entire thing to see how he was, you know, pushing it. But it's an option out there. And you know what? We always have to think about changing things around. And you know, if you get a group of smart racing guys in a room and you know, shoot this around and get some ways to get it done, you know, why not talk about it?
I agree. And when Dick Powell joins us on Thursday, I'll let Dick riff on how Hong Kong has it. And our Steve on Twitter just sent a note to me. Sounds like the ratings in greyhound racing. And yes,
right.
Exactly. And there's even the categorization A, B, and C. And it absolutely. And I don't see what would be wrong with either having, you know, designated, quote unquote, those selling races, like in Europe, where after the race, everybody goes to the paddock or goes to a designated area. And if somebody wants to, you know, if you run in that race and you're designating your horse available for purchase, people can see how they run. And if, you know, if they want to go and make the deal, they make the deal. And there's also the possibility, if you didn't do that, you could have regular intervals that essentially would be an on-track paddock sale, right? Where you know, a week out or 2 weeks out, you know, people that are interested in offering their horses up every 2 weeks or every month at an extended meet, you could have essentially a horse of racing age sale.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, as long as you threw that last part in, where there's a chance for horses to change hands, I think that needs to still be available. And I know, geez, nowadays when you talk about 5 years ago, you usually double it. So I'm going to say 10 years ago, we had talked about doing something like that at Santa Anita, experimenting with a paddock sale after the race.
Yes.
And literally right after the race, horses, you know, they come back, they do, you know, a few laps around a paddock, and then let's go. And we couldn't get the logistics right. Who's available? Could you buy your own horse back? You know, if somebody was bidding on your horse, could you buy him back? How long would it take right after the race? Oh, geez, we can't do it in the paddock because the other horses from the next race are coming in the paddock. So we talked about it. We actually got to step B, and figured, you know what, this is way more complicated than a, you know, a couple day meeting. We need to really think about it, and it never had any legs after that. It just logistically wasn't feasible. But if you decided to go the whole way, maybe that's what you do after the races are over, and you designate, you know, the third Friday of every month as auction day, and any horse that ran in that period could come in and, you know, be bid on. So I think as long as you have that on the end where you have some vehicle where horses are being bought and sold, I think it's like I said, we got it. We get stuck in, hey, that's the way we've always done it. That's the way we've always done it. That's the way we've always done it. And things don't change. So it's definitely something that maybe needs to be taken a look at on a serious level.
It could really alleviate a fair amount of the negative perception associated with horses down the claiming ladder, moving down the claiming ladder. I asked you on Friday, the principal topic that we didn't even get a chance to really handicap in earnest, but a lot of this kind of harkens over to the Green Grotto topic, concerns over horses that came from the upper level and start to work their way down the claiming ranks, and the perception that it's a negative, and it's sad that so and so was a stake horse and now he's running for 20,000. I guess I understand that mentality. He's done enough, and he did so and so. But I don't know. Where do you draw the line? As to what is problematic or just a negative perception, versus stepping in and pulling a horse out of out of the field of competition.
Well, we talked about that a little bit on Friday, where the racing, the racetrack, but more specifically the racing secretary or the racing officer, anyone can pull a horse out if it's just if they don't feel comfortable with the horse being, or he's out of shape. And important, but the important note about doing that is every case is different. It depends on the situation, depends on the people, depends on the horse. And, you can't say every horse that drops from 20 to 10, oh, that's a bad claim. We can't do that. We would take them out. And that's being a little bit general. But we have those ones, like you said, that just, horses run last 5-6 times. Now he's been on the bottom. There's no more where to drop. There's no more trying him long. There's no more trying him short. And you know what? He just doesn't look good out there. He's going to run last. He's going to go up at 100 to 1. Sometimes you're just better off, making that phone call and say, hey, you know what, we don't want this horse to run here, and taking him out before he makes the paper. And even sometimes when they sometimes get by and they do make the form, and you look at it the next day and you go, well, we can't have this horse here. And, you make the call and you just tell the trainer or the owner, whichever one is the last stop, and say, thank you, but we'd rather not have this horse run. And that can be done anywhere at any racetrack by anybody. Like I said, every case is different, so you got to be careful with how you do it. But we've done it, and it's been done, I'm sure, at every racetrack at some point. And you listen to the stories, and face it, some people you believe that they're doing the right thing and they've taken care of the horse, and you've seen their work before, and maybe you give them that one shot, and there's other people that just like, you know what, this doesn't feel right coming off the farm after, a year and a half.
Yeah,
and dropping,
exactly.
And you just say, nah, and it's not doing it, and you don't even want to hear a story. So I think we're getting more and more aware of that. I think racetracks are more and more aware of it, and the deal is you just do it. You don't read about the ones that you've done. You don't come out with a press release, although some places try and do that. You just do it and move on. And so racetracks do that all over the place. You just don't see, hey, we pulled a horse out today, look at us. You just don't see that, but it is being done. And I think if you just kind of jog your memory, go over the last 4, 5, 6 years, you don't see as many of those wow horses that you used to see years ago in the lineup, because they are being pulled out.
Now, it just goes hand in hand with the overall awareness and just being cognizant of doing the right thing, and the getting away from trying to squeeze out one last start. We have said and tried to extol the virtue of not one last race, but one less race, and retiring a horse sound. I mean, that's the key, is to be able to look around the corner. I mean, because this all gets down to knowing when to get horses off the track, that's the key for everybody. And the point to drive home for this is the retirement organizations, the second career teams, can place a sound retiree in 30 seconds flat instead of burdening. You're putting two things at risk. You're putting a horse at risk, obviously, and the riders, but you're also adding to the burden that is already established for the second career organizations to then take a horse that is now injured and getting them to recoup, if possible even, and the expense and the time involved, where they could have literally had the racetrack kind of decanted out of them and retired right into a happy new career. So this all works together.
That's a great point, because let's face it, 20 years ago it wasn't as prevalent that you could just pick up the phone and call Karma or call the retirement foundations that are everywhere in every state and say, hey, can you please take my horse? Absolutely. We'll bring a van right up. So those are much more available, which I think has helped with the burden of an owner saying, hey, what are we going to do with the horse? Oh, we can call somebody? Great. Let's do the right thing.
Yep.
And we started years ago out here, and I'm sure the places do the same thing. When the stall applications come out, I have a no list, meaning we go through, somebody would apply for 20 horses and they got 10, but guess what? We don't want this one to even show up here because we're not comfortable with them. And so we have the no list, and didn't even want them on the ground. So it wasn't even like they even got here and, hey, we'll give it a couple of shots. No, if they didn't look good on the application, we don't even want to give them a shot. So we would, we have a big list that you could bring these four. You could, have 10 stalls, but these four are not part of that 10, period. And
exactly.
It took a little while to get over that, but I think everyone gets it now. We're working together, and nobody wants to see that horse out there. I mean, there's a couple guys out here. They run them. They only want to run, too much too. A couple, not many, but a few of the guys. It's like, hey, this is the third time in 2 weeks you're trying to run. You just can't do it. So we'll wait another week and do that. So it takes a little policing on site, and it's happening. But you don't know it because you don't see it, because it's happening before it gets the paper. So before you used to see them in the forum and go, wow, look at that. And I think it's few and far between where you're looking at those horses and saying, what is that horse doing here? How do they let him run? So it's just a combination of just awareness and availability of placing those horses around. I think people are just a little bit more, just aware of what the public thinks, and that's good in all facets of our game. And you had Steve on earlier, even before I come on. Boy, look at those. Do you see those two-year-olds he sent out over the weekend at Saratoga? Oh, my gosh. circle those. You're gonna see them.
He's sending them out. And I didn't even get to the ones in Texas and at Ellis and at Louisiana Dow. I mean, a parade of two-year-olds. Hammer, we will reconvene on Friday.
Sounds great. Have a great week, everybody.
Rick Hammerly with a quick spot on the big claiming conversation of between Friday and Sunday. I wanted to address it while it was hot. And Steve Asmussen, Mark Cassie, and Josie Carroll today, Matt Hegarty and Jill Byrne as well. And tomorrow, Andy Serling, Kenny McPeak, and much, much more. I got to get Michael Dickinson, right? How do you resist a freewheeling mad the mad scientist, Michael Dickinson? We'll try to get him tomorrow. Good luck today. Lots of good action. Indiana, Finger Lakes, Canterbury, and more. Talk to you in the morning.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864.